And that sound means it is time for This Week in History with Hillsborough Town historian Scotty Washington, who joins us here now in the studio. Welcome, Scotty.
Hey, well, it's great to be here, Aaron, and this beautiful but very the Arctic weather that we're having here.
Oh, yeah,
February.
It's awful, it right? Yeah. Well, I mean, wait a few years and this will be the Arctic weather.
Right.
Give it time.
Well, you know, it's a great week for history, and on this week of History Matters, the Carolina Connection, there's all kind of fun things. Now, some of the listeners here, I'm sure, have seen this wonderful movie, Hidden Figures.
Yes. I haven't yet, actually.
Oh, it's so good. It's
went
just
down to
great.
Visit my grandma in Alabama last week, which is why I wasn't here, and went down. We were gonna see a movie. And it's like, well, fingers crossed she hasn't seen Hidden Figures, but she had. So we went to Plan B.
Well, she got to see you. So
she
I
got
think
to see
that,
me.
You know,
yeah, that was the highlight.
Yeah,
right? I got to see her. She got to see me.
That's living history, right
yes,
there.
Yes,
absolutely.
Definitely.
That's a good thing.
Speaking of Hidden Figures, though.
Yes. Well, this Monday, February 20th, 1962, is when John Glenn orbited the Earth in Friendship 7, mm-hmm. and that's kind of the background for this movie. And but the Carolina Connection, which is so cool, is that Morehead Planetarium from 1960 to 1975 trained the astronauts, including 11 of the 12 men who walked on the moon, to actually be able to look out their windows and be able to recognize the stars.
That's really cool.
Isn't that amazing?
That 12th guy must be real upset today.
Darn it.
I missed out on Morehead Planetarium.
We got another couple of planets.
You got a consolation prize. It's fine.
That's right.
That's really cool. But this is something that people don't necessarily know about Chapel Hill. Like, you go to Morehead Planetarium,
right.
It's right there. They trained the astronauts.
That's
B,
right.
The astronauts were here training, which
That's
is
right.
also cool.
So
yeah.
John Glenn was in a simulation capsule looking out a window. And they were actually altering the path of the stars to show, like, all right, this is where you'd be in your flight at this point.
Nice.
So they could, and you know, that really becomes critical. You think, okay, everything is automated. Think of Apollo 13.
Yeah.
Remember those scenes that even in that movie where they're having to make just kind of looking out the window and shoot for stars? That's because they had trained here rigorously and they could do it. Now, that I just think is exciting history. And that's why.
I also appreciate their training. And then, like, how many months later do you have to recall in your mind where this particular star, this particular constellation is going to be in the sky? That's got to be, I forgot what I ate for breakfast this morning.
Well, it is fun to go out at night. And if you get a clear night, look up and see, like, you can usually find the Big Dipper.
You can find the Big Dipper and Orion.
And somewhat as you go through the season. So it's exciting to think that we had astronauts that actually walked on the moon, and including John Glenn, who was here in Chapel Hill at the Morehead Planet, crawling into these simulation capsules and looking at stars. And now you can go there now and look at the stars without having to do that.
In the same dome, which is really cool.
Which is really, really cool.
55 years ago this week, John Glenn.
Exactly. Now, you know, you think about the primitive computers they were using. Mm-hmm. In fact, in that movie Hidden Figures, the computers are the women. Who are the ones who are doing these computations. And then you think of, like, Monday, February 20th, 1926, Kenneth Olson is born, and he co-founds the computer giant Digital Equipment Corporation. Now, if you're wondering, gee, I haven't heard of that. Well, it's because it's no more.
It doesn't exist.
But I love this quote in 1977 when he said, "There is no reason for any individual to have a computer in his home."
There you go.
And, you know, now the whole definition of what is a computer,
right.
That's just changed.
I mean, in 1977, he was close to right. I mean, given the technology that existed, it can't see 5 years ahead of him is the
that's
problem.
Right.
Yeah.
Oh, well, now, you know, even the HDTVs mm-hmm. are, in a
our
sense,
computers. Yeah,
that's
definitely.
Right, which is kind of an amazing thing.
And every phone in your pocket and every iPad you've got, like, we're just surrounded by them.
Yes, everywhere. Well, you know, something else happens on February 20th, and I think that it's time to finally clarify this about Frederick Douglass. Now, who would have thought Frederick Douglass would have come up in the news? Now, this was a noted abolitionist. He was born into slavery, and he escaped to Great Britain, and then he raises the money to, quote-unquote, buy his freedom. You know, he's really trying to follow the steps, and then teaches himself to read and write and becomes an eloquent spokesman. Actually was up in Nantucket, believe it or not, at one time, and certainly was in the White House with Lincoln. And then, of course, we heard this amazing comment by our current president.
Yes.
When he said, Frederick Douglass is an example of somebody who's done an amazing job and is getting recognized more and more. Which is, you know,
I guess it's true.
It is true. I mean, well, there's the African-American Museum, and certainly
right,
he is.
Right.
But what the White House Press Secretary Sean Spicer, trying to clarify it, just made it even more muddled. He said, I think there's contributions. I think he wants to highlight, Donald Trump, the contributions that Frederick Douglass has made, and I think through a lot of the actions and statement that he's going to make, I think the contributions of Frederick Douglass will become more and more.
Yes.
That clarifies a lot of things. But he did, unfortunately, die on this date, February 20th in 1895, born in 1870.
Yeah.
And, you know, it is worthy, whatever reasons, to bring up history and say this is somebody who is very important.
And, yeah. Over and above the fact that Donald Trump clearly has no idea who this man is. He's actually one of the most important figures in American history.
Yes, that's right. Oh, my gosh.
You could do a lot, I think, just sort of teaching a class of American history just in terms of autobiographies.
Yes.
Like read Franklin, read Douglass.
That's right.
Yeah.
And in Hillsboro, at the Burwell Historic Site, there was an enslaved woman that came down with the Burwell family named Elizabeth Keckley.
Mm-hmm.
She eventually gets her freedom. She makes her way to Washington, D.C. She's a skilled seamstress, can read and write, and she hits it off with Mary Todd Lincoln. She's in the White House at the same time. So here's a local connection with what's going on with Frederick Douglass. I love to see those kind of connections.
There you go.
Nothing about computers, but that's
right.
Pretty good.
This History Matters with Scott Washington. What else went on this week?
Okay, well, here's one that's kind of cool. If anybody has seen Ghostbusters with Bill Murray, on February 20th, 1980, Joseph Banks Rhine, J.B. Rhine, died. He was born in 1895. He's the guy who actually started the first scientific research into parapsychology. He's the guy who actually coined the phrase extrasensory perception.
Nice.
And did those kind of like, all right, guess what I'm holding at the beginning
right,
of that film.
Right.
But that was right here. He was associated
with
Duke.
And it was at Duke, yeah.
That's right. And then he actually moved away from Duke, but stayed right in Durham and did research for many, many years. And many of these same kind of parapsychology investigations still can trace the roots back.
I am a little bit surprised that you referred to Bill Murray as the star of Ghostbusters. I guess he did make a cameo briefly in that movie.
Wait a minute, hold on now. He was in that. Wasn't he in that? Yes, Bill Murray was in
that. We're talking about two different Ghostbusters here.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, the most recent one. I'm talking about the
classic.
The most
recent one makes the cameo, the
classic.
That's right.
Oh, okay. Yes, yes.
Yeah. All right. So that's February 20th.
Yes. Well, now, February 21st, 1948, this is a kind of a cool thing. NASCAR was founded.
Mm-hmm.
And now, this is the National Association for Stock Car Racing by Bill France back in 1948 on this date. Now, the connection here, and I should say that during Prohibition, there were people who had, and after Prohibition, especially in the Carolinas, people would soup up vehicles because they were running moonshine and trying to get away from the revenue collectors, and that led
with
to
Foggy
the
Mountain Breakdown
right,
playing
exactly.
Behind them the entire time.
Yes, the Dukes of Hazzard
comes
to mind.
Yeah.
And so anyways, he's flying over, Bill France is a pilot, he's flying over this area, and he looks down and he sees a horse track that's down there in Hillsboro, and he makes an offer. And they expand that horseshoe track, and it becomes one of the first NASCAR racetracks. Today, it's the last surviving dirt racetrack. You can actually go out there and walk it. People every September, they have a gathering, and some of the old drivers still drive it. It's a little more dangerous
now. That's really cool, yeah, yeah.
But it's great fun to know that that happened.
Can we actually go back a second? Because
sure.
You just threw out that fact that we made a joke about, but I didn't realize that the whole NASCAR thing started
yes.
with moonshining during
yes.
Prohibition.
Yes,
that's
isn't that cool?
Wonderful.
Yes. Well, people wanted to say...
I always thought that Prohibition had no positive results, but apparently it did.
Well, as people raced their cars and got away, then it naturally came up. My car is faster than yours. Oh, yeah, well,
yes.
Let's see.
Let's race
and
it.
And
yeah.
These are all souped-up cars, and that's what began it. Now, NASCAR doesn't like to make a big deal about that, But I talked with one fella at the Orange County Historical Museum a few years ago who had actually said, I think I was a lookout for my family. I said, what are you talking about? He said, he was a kid, and his mom would say, all right, if you see the law coming, you tell me. And then he would see him coming down, and one time they were coming down the driveway, and he said, oh, they're coming. And his mom was breaking all the moonshine into the tub.
So, you have a long way to get to community policing.
I know,
I
that's
tell
right.
You.
That's exactly right. So it's all kind right. of fun. Jane Mansfield actually was in a pace car there. So it had some...
Richard Petty won the last race,
that's
right?
That's right, 68? That's right. Yeah. And when it started, there weren't any big organized sports in the South. Mm. So the South embraced this in a big way, which is why. Now, eventually, it was clergy who raised a ruckus because a lot of these races were held on Sunday. And it was so noisy with 10,000 people and the cars that finally the clergy prevailed and Bill France had to look around. And so that's where we have the Talladega Speedway now.
Interesting.
Because he said, well, I've got to go somewhere else.
Right,
right.
Because
it's a great sport. Otherwise, it would still be here. But you can still go there to Hillsboro and walk the course, which is just really wild.
Very cool. All right.
Okay.
What's next?
All right. Well, you know, this is a sad
note. I should mention
note.
That Scott walked in with 11 pages worth of notes from this week in history.
Oh, it's so exciting.
It's so exciting,
oh,
yeah.
Well, to find these connections of, like, looking at all these historical events, people who were born and died, and then to throughout history, and then to say, oh my gosh, look at all this stuff related
to Carolina,
to this area.
Chapel Hill, Hillsboro.
That's right.
Yeah.
And
I like this next one because
this is
the, you talk about sort of evolution and extinction
yes.
of species as being this negative thing that we want to avoid, but what you're describing here appears to be the worst bird in the world.
But
in terms
pretty.
Of the way that this description runs.
that's such a generous way to put it. Tuesday, February 21st, 1918, the last Carolina parakeet died, and that whole species became extinct. And it's so fascinating to see that Sir Walter Raleigh mentions these flocks of these birds in a 1596 book. Captain John Smith mentions these parrots. William Byrd, who surveyed the boundary between Carolina and Virginia in 1728, he talks about these parakeets, which were not very long, about a foot long, with a wingspan of about 22 inches, mostly green with an orange head, a yellow neck, white legs. But the real thing about these birds were they were flocks, and they were loud and harsh and grating, and they
huge,
also...
Huge, like, blot-out-the-sun kind of
yeah.
flocks.
And they would, any sort of, as farmers expanded to this part of the state, they would swoop down on the crops, and that led to their extinction because they wouldn't scatter, and so they could be captured. One of the fascinating things, not only did they seem to mate for a long time, maybe for life, but when a parakeet died or was killed, a host of chattering birds promptly surrounded its body. And that was another way that they were able to kill a large number. But, you know, there's the carrier pigeon, the Carolina parakeet, actually found throughout the Southeast, gone. And footnote in history, unless we have somebody from, like, who has Jurassic Park
abilities, yeah.
Find some DNA and suddenly...
Find some DNA sort of embedded in some...
That's right.
Some Okonichi Speedway oil.
Oh,
and...
I know. Isn't that something?
There you go.
Now,
all right.
Along with this
all right.
The February 21st is when Mary Wollstonecraft Shelley died. Now, she's the English author born in 1797 who wrote Frankenstein. But now, what I did not know was that, and there is an actual Carolina connection, like, all right, where are we going with this?
Yeah.
But this is a cool
thing.
This is
a world connection that includes Carolina.
That's right.
Yeah.
Well, she goes with her love to, and they think they're getting away to a nice vacation getaway. No, it doesn't be like, the weather is terrible because a volcano, Mount Tambora in Indonesia, explodes and suddenly climate is drastically changed. Mm-hmm. And here in the Carolinas, in fact, it was a whole summer where a heavy frost was recorded. Just like, well, I don't know, you know, the weather.
Like the opposite of what we're seeing
exactly,
now, right?
That's right. I think I'd rather have this weather, but that is just such an interesting thing. And there are some people, since weather features so prominently in that book about Frankenstein, that you kind of wonder about the, you know, kind of Frankensteins that we have maybe unwittingly released and that we have to address in our own lifetimes.
Indeed. One of the things that we got some information here about Frankenstein, and one of the things that I found really interesting about it was that she and Percy Shelley, yeah, her husband, the poet, were on vacation and couldn't do anything because the weather was so terrible. So, like, well, let's just sit down and write. And that's how this all got started. So if you take your kids on vacation somewhere and it's just rain all week long, sit them down with a notebook and tell them to write a scary story. And this is what could come out of it.
Yes, exactly. Isn't that wonderful? Yeah, the early Stephen King influence
there. All right.
We've
got History Matters with Scott Washington. Scott, we got to let you go in just a minute.
That's okay.
But any big ones left for the rest of the week?
Well, Amerigo Vespucci died in 1512, born in 1451, Italian explorer for whom America is named. And that's kind of fun to realize that, no, this wasn't something. Where did that come from? Well, it came from a fellow who looked and said, there are two different continents. There's North America and South America. Yep. Tennis, if anybody plays tennis, 1874.
On this date in history.
On this date, yes, is when it was patented by a fellow in Great Britain. Now, I never thought about that. Like, what? So instead of a board game,
must
he
have been
went
a
for...
bunch of really interesting diagrams.
Very interesting. So as we get into Mardi Gras, and which finishes on the 28th, we might at least note that the first mayor and governor of New Orleans was born on this date. So that's kind of a cool
Jean-Baptiste Lemoyne de Bienville. Yes. I like the idea of Mardi Gras as wrapping up on the 28th,
yeah,
as if it's not in reference to one day. Like, it is, in fact, the 28th, but I was just down in Alabama. No, Mardi Gras is like a three-month affair down there.
It's going on. It continues to go on.
That was
absolutely
a lot of fun.
It is. It is a lot of fun.
All right. History Matters with Scott Washington. That was our meeting for this week. Scott Washington, thank you so much.
History Matters. Keep going and keep looking around because you never know when history is going to happen to you.